more. Baby, it's no lie. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Grass may have in the middle. We are. Grass may have in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a lot going on this week. We're going to get into Kolomoisky, Zelensky's partner, and his backer for his presidency. A little bit at the end here, but at the beginning here, we're going to go back 2 years in time, and Mark Levin is interviewed by Hannity. And boy, I tell you what, Sean Hannity and Mark Levin, they hit it off, and they really, we go back 2 years because we want to bring a little of that history up at this time. And he's, and Mark Levin and them are talking about wiretapping. So here we go with this conversation.
Here now with reaction from Levin TV, a studio in Virginia, the host of Levin TV, CRTV Network. I call him the great one. You know what it's like to get you on the show? It's like pulling teeth. You know that? We're glad to have
Very
you back,
good.
My friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm laying out the basics here. You put together in a very comprehensive way, and I give you a lot of credit for putting all this together. This isn't the right-wing conspiracy. This isn't conservative Sean Hannity, conservative Mark Levin. This is the New York Times. This is McClatchy. Explain.
And yet it's only conservatives who are concerned about what they're reading in liberal media outlets. Have you noticed that? The media is very confounded right now. They're very confused. They don't know whether to trash themselves, trash their colleagues, or what. Now, you asked a question. You said, what did Obama know? We know he knows this much. Everything you just read, he knew, because it's in the newspapers. That's pretty big. Number two, we know that if a FISA warrant was secured, it's very likely in his daily intelligence briefing or a call from the attorney general or the director of the FBI, the president would be given a heads up. There's nothing illegal about it, but he'd be given a heads up. Here's what else we know. There's all kinds of, based on these reports, investigative activities going on. You know, McClatchy reported the agencies involved, the FBI, CIA, National Security Agency, Justice Department, Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. I assume Obama knew something. I mean, unless he's Helen Keller. Now, let me make another point about this. That's a hell of a lot of agency resources. Those are a hell of a lot of investigators. The news reports, you mentioned the New York Times, January 20th. I just want to make sure CNN and MSNBC are aware of this.
They watch all the time, Mark. Nobody's watching them. Go ahead.
Wiretap data used in inquiry of Trump aides. I never said independent of news reports about the wiretap. Wiretap data used in inquiry of Trump aides. Well, didn't Mr. Clapper say there were no FISA orders issued? Can you play that tape for me so I can comment on that pull this together?
I think we have that loaded, and because he said it on Meet the Press this weekend. But we'll get
it
in a second.
Oh, it's very profound.
Yeah, well, but we'll get to that in a second. Go ahead.
But let me comment on it. It's very, very important.
Yeah.
It's very important because if Clapper says there was no FISA order, and he was very broad, and he was very definite, and he said, no, I don't remember this, and you'll play it later, then what the hell are we talking about? That means they didn't have enough information for probable cause to get a warrant in front of the FISA court. So what's the FBI, the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Justice Department, the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network investigating? What are these wiretaps that the New York Times is talking about? You know, I know they want to focus on Donald Trump and his tweet. I want to focus on America and the Constitution. The reason I got fed up with this last week is I'm a constitutional conservative. I look at this. If I'm reading these news reports, we have a runaway executive branch, I don't know who knows what. And as of today, the media don't appear to know who knows what, which is exactly why I've been calling for congressional investigations. The question is, why aren't CNN, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and all the rest of them, why aren't they concerned about this?
Mark,
rather than mock the president and his tweet, pay attention to what your own reporters and other reporters are saying.
So what you say is really deep and profound here, and I want to put some emphasis on this, and that is that the news media reported the leaks. The news media reported the surveillance. They reported it repeatedly. This is the mainstream media. As far as I know, they've never retracted the story. And everybody knew about it. It was not something that was hidden. Now, in fact, Donald Trump mentions that, in fact, it happened. And somehow this is, this is outrageous. What do we
look?
How do we definitively find out that, in fact, in June and again in October, there were attempts to surveil the then candidate of the opposition party by the current administration at the time, the Obama administration?
Well, two things need to happen one way or another. Number one, the FISA applications, which Clapper denies, by the way. He denies, and the follow-up was pathetic over there at NBC, but we'll get to that. The FISA applications should be released. That's number one. The warrant that was supposedly secured in October should be released. The other thing that needs to be done is these daily presidential briefings that the president received, that the intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies coordinate on and prepare. The Intelligence Committee chairman need to read them. And now we'll get to the bottom of this. Now, I find it very interesting. People are saying, well, let Trump release the damn FISA stuff. Can you imagine if he does that? He'd be accused of interfering with investigations, trying to intimidate the Justice Department. No. Let Congress finally step up and do its job. They have oversight committees. We pay these people to do their jobs. Now, get into those damn FISA applications.
Isn't the reason...
Look at the so-called warrant. Hold on now.
Yeah.
Look at the warrant that was released. Look at these daily briefings, and let's see what's in them.
All right, great one. We miss having you on. Stay right there. We're going to keep you while we got you.
He's bringing up Sean Hannity, a little current stuff about Adam Schiff. He's calling him an outright liar, and he did lie about they had contacted someone on his staff or someone connected with Adam Schiff, contacted the whistleblower before he filed his complaint. And, boy, that calls for them to recuse themselves, step down or something. He's being really attacked now by a lot of different people to get out and to stop this investigation or at least resign from that committee chairmanship. But here we go now with Hannity. Current.
All right, the House Intel Committee Chairman, Adam the Cowardly Shifty Schiff. He has been caught in yet another insane lie. Now, it's no secret the Cowardly Schiff is dishonest, deceptive. He is a proven liar, nothing but a political hack and operative. He has been proven to lie over and over and over again. We have offered him time on this program, a full hour. I'll give him a full week. And 5 days on my radio show, that's 20 hours of broadcasting. But Schiff's most recent lie, uncovered in a brand new report, believe it or not, although they tried to couch it a lot, still couldn't hide the fact, the New York Times, maybe one of his worst yet. The Times now reporting that the shifty, cowardly Schiff, he got an early account of the so-called whistleblower's accusations. In other words, Representative Adam B. Schiff, California, learned about the so-called whistleblower, is not a whistleblower, and that whistleblower's so-called concerns before he or she filed a complaint. In fact, Schiff's office spoke directly to the future non-whistleblower whistleblower and even recommended that the future he or she hire an attorney and meet with the inspector general to file a complaint. His fingerprints all over this. This is not a real whistleblower. Hearsay, oh, I heard it from so-and-so, heard it from so-and-so, heard it from so-and-so. Yeah, that would not be admissible in a court of law, but apparently not in the court of corrupt Democrats who spread lies and conspiracy theories and one hoax after another. They barely miss a beat, hoax to hoax to hoax. And the sleazebag, the cowardly Schiff himself, was behind this, quote, nonpartisan, totally legitimate whistleblower complaint from the very beginning. This can't possibly be the same cowardly Schiff who was from California, who actually went on conspiracy television, Area 51 Roswell Rachel's network, MSDNC, on September the 17th and claimed, quote, we have not spoken directly to the whistleblower. a lie. Take a look.
We have not spoken directly with the whistleblower. We would like to, but I'm sure the whistleblower has concerns that he has not been advised, as the law requires, by the Inspector General or the Director of National Intelligence, just as to how he is to communicate with Congress.
Lying through his teeth, caught yet again. And the cowardly Schiff, the shifty Schiff, well, was practically holding the whistle on the non-whistleblower. Keep in mind, that guy, the same con artist who's now leading the Democrats' idiotic impeachment inquiry, which is totally based on the whistleblower complaint that the shifty Schiff himself had a hand in creating, clearly, and offering advice to. This is why Americans hate the swamp known as Washington, D.C. The leaking, the lying, the scheming, the undermining, the character assassination, all of it from Schiff, a disgusting abuse of power. By the way, he now needs to be investigated. He must be held accountable. We are calling tonight for an independent ethics investigation into the office of the cowardly Adam Schiff. He must immediately now recuse himself from any impeachment inquiry, and it is time that this liar go under oath about his involvement in this phony whistleblower report. Every American who voted, you got to understand what this is about. If you voted for Donald Trump, you're a smelly Walmart shopper like me. I think it's smart to shop at Walmart. I like Walmart. You save money. And you're an irredeemable deplorable, and you're a bitter American that clings to their God, Bible, religion, Second Amendment rights. You need to understand tonight that corrupt congressman is willing to do almost anything to remove a duly elected president, the president you voted for. His deranged lying, his conspiracy theories, spreading his hoax are now catching up to him. He is not fit to serve in Congress at all, let alone the chairman of this committee. And sadly, what we are seeing here is nothing new. It's the same shift, different day. Play on words. As Congressman Jordan pointed out, this fits his pattern. Schiff seems to have a hand in virtually every conspiratorial anti-Trump smear brought before Congress. For example, summer of 2018, there was the shifty Schiff, the cowardly Schiff, a secret meeting with Fusion GPS founder Glenn Simpson, you know, the guy that Robert Mueller had never heard of. At the same time, Simpson, whose firm was behind Hillary's dirty dossier, was, of course, an important witness in his committee's investigation into alleged Russia collusion that's been debunked now four times. And Schiff's team, remember, they prepped Michael Cohen for 10 hours just before his testimony before his committee on Capitol Hill. Wow. And now it appears the cowardly shifty Schiff played a vital role in coordinating the secondhand whistleblower complaint. Now, whether it involves Russia, Ukraine, or I don't know, maybe it'll be the Bahamas impeachment inquiry next. Seems that the cowardly Schiff has been plotting the president's destruction, undermining your vote, lying in the process from the second the president was elected by you, we, the American people. The only problem with his strategy was always built on a pack of lies. Remember, this is the guy who actually fabricated a transcript. Remember, he's the guy, he didn't know he was being, well, pranked, and he thought he was talking to a real Russian about dirt on Donald Trump that he could use during an election. And by the way, it was read out loud in an official committee hearing. You know, remember, what's the dirt on Donald Trump? Naked pictures of Trump. Naked. Does Vladimir know? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, take a look.
There is already, in my view, ample evidence in the public domain on the issue of collusion. If you're willing to see it, if you want to blind yourself, then you can look the other way.
I can certainly say with confidence that there is significant evidence of collusion between the campaign and Russia.
I've been very clear over the last year and a half, that there is ample evidence of collusion in plain sight.
Four separate investigations. There was no evidence of anything. Lie after lie after lie after lie. Is this good for the country? Now, keep in mind, it was actually the cowardly Schiff caught on tape colluding with Russia. Yeah. Does Vladimir see it? But of course, Vladimir sees naked pictures of Trump. Remember, he was trying to get the naked pictures of Trump. He was being pranked. In other words, doing what he's accusing Trump of. But I thought Democrats were really worried about foreign election interference. I guess that only involves fictional claims against President Trump, not the dirty dossier, because if they really cared about collusion or interference, where is, well, the cowardly Schiff's hysteria over Hillary Clinton's dirty Russian dossier, as the New York Times finally concluded, likely Russian misinformation, disinformation from the start? Where's the hysteria over the DNC's collusion with Ukraine? After all, according to 2017 Politico, look at this. DNC operative pressed the Ukrainian embassy to dig up dirt on Donald Trump for Hillary during the 2016 election. And there's more. Look at the same Politico report. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter only to back away after the election. They picked the wrong horse, and they helped Hillary Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors. It's that simple. That would be foreign election interference. But according to a report from the Wall Street Journal, well, we do have two Republican senators, not Democrats, who are demanding answers into, quote, the brazen efforts by the Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton and her campaign to use the government of Ukraine for the express purpose of finding negative information on then-candidate Trump in order to undermine his campaign. That would be the exact thing they claim Trump did now twice. The hypocrisy is sick. It is frankly destructive and psychotic at this point. You got the speaker in name only, Pelosi. You got the cowardly shifty Schiff. Their pals in the media mob ignoring all the real evidence of real collusion. They're putting their agenda ahead of what is truthful, honest, and what the American people should know. Real interference, real government abuse of power, the real weaponization of America's intelligence system, oh yeah, and then FISA fraud and spying on a campaign and a transition team and a president, 3 long years hyperventilating, telling us they have the truth, one hoax after another, one lie after another, one conspiracy after another. Russia, 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 now it's Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. Let's take a look.
The president himself called on the Russians to assist his campaign by hacking Hillary Clinton's emails.
He was using that office as leverage to obtain dirt, to have another country manufacture dirt on his opponent.
We believe that the president of the United States is engaged in a cover-up.
I think right now there's a cover-up of the cover-up.
The Russians offered help. The campaign accepted help. The Russians gave help, and the president made full use of that help.
I don't think we can rely on a country that is so beholden to the good graces of Donald Trump to be able to level with us on this.
No one is above the law, especially the president of the United States. The president believes that he is above the law being the Constitution of the United States.
There is already, in my view, ample evidence in the public domain on the issue of collusion, if you're willing to see it.
It is very powerful evidence of that kind of potential impeachable offense.
See a pattern? It would almost be funny if they weren't trying to circumvent the will of you, the American people, and literally remove a duly elected president from office who's doing an amazing job under the worst circumstances. And smearing the president has been their number one goal from the very beginning. And by the way, they don't care about improving the lives of Americans in spite of their lofty, you know, cliched language from earlier today. As the president tweeted, the do-nothing Democrats should be focused on building up our country, not wasting everyone's time and energy on BS, which is what they have been doing ever since I got overwhelmingly elected in 2016, 223 to 306. Get a better candidate this time. You'll need it. By the way, guys, we have an election in a year. You think your ideas are superior? You think your record is better? Okay, let's have it out in the ring. It's called an election. Let the American people decide for once, and maybe you guys can just put your best candidate forward who wants to spend $94 trillion and eliminate gas, oil, energy, the combustion engine, planes, and cows. Run on that $94 trillion idiocy and eliminating private insurance. Good luck with that. President continue to fight back against those who want to take him down. Watch this.
We don't call him Shifty Schiff for nothing. He's a shifty, dishonest guy who, by the way, was critical of one of the great Secretary of States, graduated,
number one in his class at West Point, graduated one of the top in his class at Harvard Law School, the most honorable person, Mike Pompeo. And this guy was negative on Mike Pompeo. He can't, you know, there's an expression, he couldn't carry his blank strap. I won't say it because they'll say it was so terrible to say. But that guy couldn't carry his blank strap. Do you understand that? So you deal with bad people. And, you know, I watched China over the last few days, and I watched some of these other countries build up. And we've built up more than any of them because of me. But no help due to the Democrats. They're a disaster. They're the do-nothing Democrats. They don't do any work. All they want to do is try and win the election in 2020. So they come up with this impeachment nonsense, and everyone knows. The conversation, all based on one phone call that I had, where I'm talking to the president of Ukraine. You'll hear from our ambassadors. You'll hear from some of the folks that know all about the call, why the call was set up, and everything else. It's perfect. The call was perfect. Nancy Pelosi and Shifty Shift, who should resign in disgrace, by the way, and Jerry Nadler and all of them. It's a disgrace what's going on. And we should be focused on making America great again and keeping America great. Because what they did with this nonsense, think of it. You have a perfect, I mean perfect, conversation with a president of another country, Ukraine in this case. And they try and say, oh, let's impeach him. They've been trying to impeach me from the day I got elected. I've been going through this for 3 years. They've been trying to impeach me from the day I got elected. And you know what? They failed. And this is the easiest one of all, because this one is based on one conversation. What about Obama's conversation with the president of Russia, where he says, hey, tell Vlad I'll talk to him after the election's over. I'll talk to him. Nobody reports that, right? That stuff you should report. But you people should be ashamed of yourself. We have the most dishonest media that you can imagine, and you should be ashamed of yourself. But here's what happened. The whistleblower was wrong. The only thing that matters is the transcript of the actual conversation that I had with the president of Ukraine. It was perfect. We're looking at congratulations. We're looking at doing things together. And what are we looking at? We're looking at corruption. And in, I believe, 1999, there was a corruption act or a corruption bill passed between both and signed between both countries, where I have a duty to report corruption. And let me tell you something. Biden's son is corrupt, and Biden is corrupt. And I'd rather run against Biden than almost any of those candidates, and I think they're all weak. But I think Biden has never been a smart guy, and he's less smart now than he ever was. Thank you very much.
And the president's supposed to faithfully execute the laws of the land, and that would be election interference that those people used to care about. The president also had pointed words for the lying, corrupt media mob, and I call them a mob for a reason, because they are. Take a look.
We're going to move on over to Tucker Carlson and some of his, this last night, it was on Friday night, and he has a fifth row of about three or four items and ends up with about Seattle losing control of their law enforcement mechanism up there. It's just going crazy. Here we go with Tucker Carlson.
Well, good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. We're nearing the end of our second full week of total saturation Ukraine coverage. That means every channel, every hour of the day. So at this point, you'd think it would be obvious what exactly the fuss is about. After this much talking, you would assume every person in America would understand what crimes Donald Trump is being accused of committing. But no. Even now, the story still feels obscure and strangely light. There's nothing mysterious or weighty about it. We already know all of the facts. There's a transcript. And yet they still don't seem very shocking. And so maybe for that reason, our news anchors have been doing their very best to keep the blood pressure high. The game is boring, so the cheerleaders have to work overtime. Twice as hard. For example, here was MSNBC's best attempt to get you to care.
I don't say this lightly, but let's be frank, a national nightmare is upon us. The basic rules of our democracy are under attack from the president. We begin tonight with a series of admissions by the president that all but assures his impeachment in the House of Representatives. This moment should arguably be a national emergency. The founding fathers would have considered it a national emergency if the president publicly lobbied multiple foreign governments to interfere in the next election. It's tough to say lightly, but this is the moment that we're at.
Well, I think a cliche bomb just went off. Try to ignore how hackneyed and badly written that speech was. The state of education in this country clearly is in rapid decline. Nobody can write a decent paragraph anymore. Someday we're going to do a special on that. But for now, consider the substance of what you just heard to the extent there was any. The basic rules of our democracy are under attack. That's what they're telling you. So what exactly are the basic rules of our democracy? Well, the most basic rule of all is that the people rule. In a democracy, the big decisions are made by voters in elections. They are not made by left-wing talk show hosts or by the Washington Post or even by high-level CIA employees acting anonymously as whistleblowers. No. In a democracy, the main decisions are made by citizens casting ballots. That, for example, is how you remove a president, by beating him in an election. That's always the way we did it here in America. Not anymore. So, yes, our democracy is under attack. They're right about that. And yet, for all his faults, Donald Trump is not the attacker. But wait a second, they're telling you. We understand how grave a decision impeachment is. In fact, we're praying over it, people of faith that we are. But in this case, impeachment is unavoidable. Soliciting information from foreign countries is corrupt and evil. That's what they're telling you. Okay, fine. But let's at least acknowledge that this standard is a brand new standard. I mean, brand new standard, like 20 minutes ago. Because it wasn't that long ago, less than a year, you'll remember this, that all of American politics revolved around information solicited from foreign countries. It was called the Steele dossier. And back then, the press corps strongly approved of it.
The allegations in this Christopher Steele dossier, and you went through the timeline very well a few moments ago, are stunning.
There are actually substantial portions of what was in the Steele dossier, which was a raw intelligence document, that have indeed checked out.
Based on our own reporting and word from numerous official sources, the dossier, in fact, is far from bogus.
I think we're going to actually have to stop calling it the infamous dossier.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly, right. It's the accurate dossier. Increasingly, it's the damning dossier. Increasingly, it's the dossier that's going to hang around the neck of the Trump administration and drag them down.
Oh, the dossier. It was totally fine. In case you've forgotten, and you may have forgotten, because why would you remember? But Christopher Steele, who wrote the dossier, was a foreign intelligence operative. He gathered his material abroad in foreign countries, some of it clearly from foreign government officials. At the time, that was absolutely fine with Democrats. They weren't embarrassed to say so. Clinton campaign staffer Brian Fallon tweeted this. We could give you a million examples. Here's one. Here's his tweet. I regret I didn't know about Christopher Steele's hiring pre-election. If I had, I would have volunteered to go to Europe and try to help him. Oh, okay. And by the way, if foreign interference is such a concern, and by the way, it should be a concern, then why aren't we more worried about foreign companies sending de facto bribes to the family members of connected politicians? There are a lot of those. We're picking on Joe Biden's son because it's in the news, but it could be a lot of people's sons. Trust me. But in the case of Biden's son, nobody thinks he's an expert on Ukrainian energy policy. He got the gig because of his dad. It was influence peddling, obviously. In this case, that's okay, though, for some reason. So let's just be totally honest. Let's stop lying, if we can, just for a second. I know it's hard in modern America where everyone's required to lie all the time. But let's just be honest for this one moment. In Washington right now, there are no actual rules. Partisans simply invent standards for the purpose of destroying their political enemies. Just today, Hillary Clinton tweeted this from a late Democratic member of Congress, this quote. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century Constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder. Barbara Jordan, by the way. In other words, if the process doesn't reach the outcome that Hillary Clinton wants it to reach, she thinks we ought to scrap the Constitution. Oh. Probably not a question that that concept appeals to Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. This week, Tlaib told her constituents that the Democratic Party is now considering ways to arrest members of Trump's cabinet. Jailing them in Detroit would be a good option, she explained. Watch this.
So they're trying to figure out, no joke, They're trying to figure out, well, is it the D.C. police that goes and gets them? No, no. Where do we hold them? So I just want you to know I will relay your message. I will tell them they can hold off those people right here in Detroit. We'll take care of them. And make sure they show up to the committee hearing. We won't hurt them.
Yeah, just going to arrest them. That's not third world or anything. Arrest the cabinet. You got to give Tlaib credit for honesty anyway. She's not pretending to be prayerful like Nancy Pelosi. She's just saying what she really thinks. And she speaks for, unfortunately, quite a few people in her party. What we're watching here, which you just watched in that clip, is politics itself breaking down. That's not politics, of course. That's not the effort to persuade people, bring them over to your side through reason. No. That's something different. Modern partisans on the left don't want to just win the next election. Electoral power is too transient. Voters might change their mind in the election after that. It happened, by the way, in 2016. Democrats don't want to take that risk again. So they've moved on from the goal of winning votes to utterly destroying their opponents, their enemies. They want them imprisoned, as you just heard. They want their families intimidated. They want their supporters humiliated and demoralized. They want to vanquish rather than win over. That's not a good way to run a country. But it's an awfully effective way to maximize political power. Catherine Herridge is our chief intelligence correspondent here at Fox News. She joins us with the very latest on the Ukraine investigation. Catherine?
Well, thanks, Tucker. Today, the intelligence community watchdog was on Capitol Hill for 7 hours behind closed doors. Sources familiar with the questioning tell Fox News that Michael Atkinson told lawmakers the whistleblower did not disclose his contact with the Democrat-led House Intelligence Committee. The sources said Atkinson revealed that the whistleblower was a registered Democrat who had a prior working relationship with a high-profile Democrat politician. And Atkinson said that he had no knowledge of how a Schiff tweet in late August about Ukraine aid and Rudy Giuliani, as well as other statements, apparently mirrored the substance of the whistleblower complaint before it was declassified and shared with Congress. Schiff's spokesman says the chairman could have been more precise in his earlier media appearances. Democrats and Republicans today disagreed on the significance.
Chairman Schiff should be disqualified from running an investigation where his committee members or staff are fact witnesses about contact with the whistleblower and the whistleblower process.
This whistleblower did a profoundly important thing by alerting the intelligence community and the intelligence committee about what is a criminal act.
This week also saw the release of these text messages from top diplomats over the president's July 25th phone call with the Ukrainian leader and the request to look into corruption allegations against Biden and his son. In September, a top diplomat to Ukraine, Bill Taylor, texts Gordon Sondland, who contributed to Trump's inaugural fund and is now the ambassador to the European Union. Taylor writes, "As I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." And Sondland responds, quote, "I believe you are incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear, no quid pro quos of any kind. The president is trying to evaluate whether Ukraine is truly going to adopt the transparency and reforms that President Zelensky promised during the campaign. I suggest we stop the back and forth by text." On the whistleblower, Fox News contacted Chairman Schiff's office and the whistleblower's legal team about the disclosure issue, and there was no immediate response. Tucker?
No immediate response. Catherine Herridge, thanks so much for that. News you can believe. Stephen Cohen is a contributing editor at The Nation. He's a retired professor of Russian studies at NYU in Princeton. He's also the author of the fantastic book War with Russia, From Putin in Ukraine to Trump and Russiagate. Professor Cohen, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Hi, Tucker.
So I just want to be clear about the Steele dossier, and I don't want to relitigate, you know, the years that we spent talking about this, but now that the standard in Washington is soliciting information from foreign governments is an impeachable offense. The Steele dossier, which was the basis of the Russia investigation, was that information in whole or in part from foreign governments?
Well, by the way, the first time we met on your program was 2.5 years ago when the Steele dossier was published. I think it was January 2017. And we talked about it then. And I said to you then, this is clearly something concocted probably by intelligence agencies around the world, and that's what it's turned out to be. Steele's premise, which got him attention, was that he got all this from sources high in the Kremlin, correct? It was supposed to be Kremlin sources. But the story didn't make any sense because the dossier said Putin wanted to elect Trump. So why then, we ask ourselves, would Putin's own agents give Steele dirt on Trump to destroy his candidacy? The whole Steele document made very little sense. By the way, we now know that that Steele was more of a composer than a writer. A lot of people contributed to it, including the wife of a very high-ranking American FBI agent, Louise Orr. She said she researched for Steele, so I assume that's what it means.
Pretty surprising, pretty stunning, actually. So you've been in and around this world for many decades. Have you seen anything like this? This appears to be in part an intelligence operation aimed at a sitting U.S. president. Is there precedent for this historically?
All right. So you've asked me to go someplace we can't go at length. Coming down here, I asked myself, have we ever had a presidential scandal like this in America? No, I can't think of one. Then, because I study the Soviet Union as a profession, I asked myself, did the Russian secret police, the KGB, run its own operations against Soviet leaders who pursued policies they didn't like? And the answer is yes, particularly detente-related policies.
Yes.
So now I connect dots, and feel free to tell me I shouldn't connect these dots, that it's a crazy Russianist thinking. But all of this Russiagate stuff seems to have originated, and that's what Steele tells us, with intelligence agencies, American and foreign. What
right.
we don't know is why, and we need to know this, they set out to destroy Trump as a candidate in 2016 and then as a president. After
right.
all, other American presidents had pursued cooperation with Russia. What was it about Trump that determined them to destroy him?
That is the question. I have theories, but I don't know if they're right. Professor, thanks so much for that perspective. Always, it's great to talk to you.
Thank you, Tucker.
Well, the Trump White House says that if Nancy Pelosi wants to pursue impeachment, she should. The administration reportedly is planning a letter to Pelosi saying it will not comply with requests for documents or other materials unless she holds a full House vote to begin a formal inquiry. Hogan Gidley is White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary, and he joins us tonight. Mr. Gidley, thanks very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much.
So is the House or is the House not impeaching Donald Trump?
That's a great question. I think one you'd have to pose to Nancy Pelosi. I mean, their own rules dictate they have to vote if they want to move toward an impeachment.
Yeah,
they have not
point.
Done that. They keep issuing subpoenas. Well, are they conducting oversight, which, of course, at this point is overreach, or are they going to move to impeach? And she hasn't answered that question. The fact is, Donald Trump has done nothing wrong, and the Democrats know it. And also, he deserves due process, just like any American citizen would. And the Democrats can't void that simply because they hate him so much or because they want to overturn the election of 2016.
Coming up next is a story about Seattle. And my gosh, they have, instead of, you know, tuning in on human nature and trying to deal with it, they're coming up with some cockamamie ideas like eggheads do directly out of sociology, psychology classes out of the college. Here we go with this report. Boy, this is sad. It's what's going on in this country.
Well, Seattle is one of the country's most progressive cities, and that means that leaders there are treating their city as a test tube for radical ideology. The city's already ceded its public spaces to massive homeless encampments. Now they're trying another experiment, mass decriminalization. A report commissioned by a Seattle Business Association found that city prosecutors refused to prosecute almost half of all non-traffic criminal cases referred to them by the city's police. For example, more than 1,800 robberies were referred by police over an 18-month period, but less than 1,000 of them resulted in criminal charges. Crystal Rufo is a fellow at the Discovery Institute, and he joins us tonight. So this is kind of an amazing number. First perspective, is this is unusual, correct?
Yeah, this is highly unusual, and really what you've seen is that Seattle has embarked on an experiment of mass decriminalization, not only decriminalizing homeless encampments in public spaces, decriminalizing possession and use of drugs like heroin and fentanyl, and now essentially a de facto decriminalization of low-level property crimes, assaults, and even robberies. But the evidence is really clear. Seattle now has property crime rates that are 86% higher than Chicago, 250% higher
than Chicago?
Than Chicago, 250% higher than Los Angeles, and 400% higher than New York City. And they're kind of operating under this mistaken idea that if you decriminalize crime, you'll get less of it. But what we've seen, especially with property crime, is that you've gotten much, much more of it, and it's reaching a pretty dangerous point.
Is that the idea, or is it the idea that we have no moral standing to enforce the law, and we hate ourselves so much that we can't possibly tell a criminal not to commit crime?
I think that's at the heart of it, and I think there is a radical progressive ideology that is seeping its way through institutions in cities like Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland, where they're saying that essentially people who are homeless or committing crimes or addicted to drugs are the victims of an unjust society, and we can't hold them accountable because to do so would be another vestige of white supremacy or fascism or racism. But what you've seen is that it's essentially devolved into a situation where you have widespread addiction. You know, by the latest estimates, we have 6,000 homeless heroin and fentanyl addicts in the Seattle area. And we know that almost all of them don't work, and they have, on average, according to federal data, an $1,800 a month drug habits. So what happens? You get a huge increase in property crime. And I live in Seattle, Washington, and even just within a few blocks of my house, you know, you've had a guy douse another guy with lighter fluid, light him on fire. You've had a number of robberies. I had a neighbor who there was a deranged man banging on her door trying to gain entry, and it took 2 hours for police to arrive because they're so busy going call to call to call.
That's a horrifying story. Seattle, for our viewers who haven't been there, is one of the prettiest places in the world, and they're wrecking it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful city. It's a city, paradoxically, of really dynamic capitalist enterprise, mass prosperity, but it's being undermined by this
right.
kind of ideological commitment that is really kind of multiplying these problems. And now we're seeing huge uptick in property crime and even random acts of violence downtown.
It's the self-hating decadence of the new rich. You see it all up and down the coast. On your side of the country. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
And
Godspeed out there.
Susan Rice, national security advisor to Barack Obama, had this to say recently on CBS about what's going on within the Trump, you could say administration. And then I'm going to review a little bit about what she said about Benghazi years ago. Here we go with this little snide remark from Susan Rice.
Is, for the first time that I can remember, our democracy is under assault. Our country is, in effect, under attack.
You write that in the book, but
and
you
that
still
attack,
believe.
That attack is coming now from within. It's coming from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Right.
And for all the security threats I saw as national security advisor, all the challenges we faced, I never thought I'd see that.
All right, Susan Rice, thank you so much for being with us. The book is Tough Love. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We go back a few years with Susan Rice, and this is what she said on that major Sunday program about what happened in Benghazi, and this video is what it was all behind. That's what. And then I'm going to play a CIA, a guy that was a survivor during that Benghazi, and we'll play an interview with what he says. But this is what Susan Rice said way back about that Benghazi, and that video is what caused everything.
Madam Ambassador, he says that this is something that's been in the planning stages for months. I understand you have been saying that you think it was spontaneous. Are we not on the same page here?
Well, Bob, let me tell you what we understand to be the assessment at present. First of all, very importantly, as you discussed with the President, there is a investigation that the United States government will launch led by the FBI that has begun.
But
and
they're not there.
They're not on the ground yet, but they have already begun looking at all sorts of evidence of various sorts already available to them and to us. And they will get on the ground and continue the investigation. So we'll want to see the results of that investigation to draw any definitive conclusions. But based on the best information we have to date, what our assessment is as of the present is, in fact, what it began spontaneously in Benghazi as a reaction to what had transpired some hours earlier in Cairo, where, of course, as you know, there was a violent protest outside of our embassy sparked by this hateful video. But soon after that spontaneous protest began outside of our consulate in Benghazi, we believe that it looks like extremist elements, individuals joined in that effort with heavy weapons of the sort that are unfortunately readily now available in Libya post-revolution, and that it spun from there into something much, much more violent.
But you do not agree with him that this was something that had been plotted out several months ago?
We do not have information at present that leads us to conclude that this was premeditated or pre-planned.
Next is an actual survivor, what he said. And he said that both Susan Rice and Hillary are lying about this video having anything to do with it. So here we go next with that interview.
Hillary Clinton claiming last night we didn't lose a single American in that action in Libya. But my next guest says, what about the aftermath? Forgetting the four Americans we lost in the 2012 Benghazi terror attacks. With me now to discuss the survivor of the Benghazi attack, he's former Marine Mark Geis. He's with us now. What do you make of Hillary's comments there, Mark?
You know, it's just typical Clinton splitting hairs. She wants to try to focus on, and she wants to focus on all of her, I guess, what she would like to call her successes, and not have anyone look at anything that she's ever done wrong. And, you know, the sign of a good leader is someone who is able to recognize not only what they've done good, but what they've done, you know, mistakes that have been made while they were in charge, and accepting that and moving forward. That's how you get better at it, is you got to look at what you've done wrong to be able to fix it. And if you don't ever want to look at what you did wrong, then you're going to get the same old, same old. And
Mark,
she's pretty much that.
Mark, if you were to advise Hillary Clinton, what would you tell her to say? What did you want to hear her say?
I would like to see her tell the families of the four Americans that sacrificed their lives that night that she apologizes for lying to them. I'd like to hear her apologize to them for lying to them and tell them the truth of what happened and why it all happened.
All right, just to make it clear to the viewer, lying to them about what?
About what happened to their, you know, the reason that the events happened that night on September 11th, 2012. You know, she immediately after at the coming home ceremony of the four dead Americans, what she looked them in the eye and said was that it was because of a video. And the video didn't play, had nothing to do with what happened in Benghazi. That all happened to do with a bunch of terrorists that wanted to kill Americans. And they don't, you know, it's radical Islamist extremism that is causing the problem, and we don't even want to recognize it. And she didn't want to then.
All right, Mark, we also had another Benghazi survivor, John Tegan. He said on the show last week that there's an unreleased video of the attack. Watch this. Listen to this.
If they really want to squash all the conspiracy theories, release the consulate video that they have, because they have it. We've seen it.
What did it show that the public does not know?
There wasn't no protest.
Mark, do you know anything about a consulate video?
Yeah, you know, the consulate, for part of their security is to have video cameras on the outside walls up and down the roads. And that there's a tape out there somewhere that would have that recorded footage. So I think John's right on point is, you know, show that footage and see what let it speak for itself. But there's a reason they don't want to show it, I'm sure.
What do you think the reason is?
Because it goes against the narrative that they've been trying to sell the public.
Which is?
That it was because of some video about Muhammad and not a terrorist attack. Not
right,
a
insulting
Islam.
Muhammad. Yeah.
Right, right.
Now, Mark, as a survivor of the attacks, what is your reaction? What do you feel when you see Mrs. Clinton making these statements? And, you know, just some critics have said she seems unaffected by her words.
You know, just looking at, for her whole career, she has had a problem with telling the truth. And I think it's just the same thing over and over. And I think if people would look at her full career, because it's one thing to make a mistake, because we all have done that. We've all maybe misspoke or made a mistake, and then we ask, you know, you go to the people that you said, and you ask for forgiveness, and you, okay, hey, this is what I did wrong. But you go all the way back to when she worked for a Democratic congressman for on the Watergate, and she got fired for unethical behavior and for lying and for taking papers home, all the way up to currently with taking emails home on her own server. I mean, there's a lot of correlation between her whole career of, I'm better than everybody else, the rules don't apply to me.
All right. Mark Geis, Benghazi survivor, thank you for your time, sir. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank God we didn't get Hillary into office. Thank God Trump was elected. Because, look, this is just an example, just a short example of the Benghazi thing and controversy of what they were doing. They stood down. There were other CIA people there that fought off, you know, and went over and rescued the remaining people at the consulate there and came back to their annex. But what was happening there was an operation to ship arms out of Libya into Syria to Benghazi port, using Turkish freighters into Syria to arm the rebels, and McCain was right there with them. So I mean, there's just so much corruption here. I mean, it defies, okay, description. Zelensko, the president of the Ukraine now. Komolovsky was his backer, okay? And Komolovsky was a guy, Igor Kolomoisky, let me say that if I get that right now. This guy's a wheeler dealer, Privat Group, is what he and a couple of other partners control. They at one time owned Privat Bank, which was taken over by the Ukrainian government because of massive fraud that occurred over a 10-year period. The IMF is alleging that maybe up to $5 to $7 billion was absconded or milked out of the bank. Who knows for sure? But Zelensky has this guy as his partner, and Zelensky he had a career. And he performed on the broadcast network that Kolomoisky owns. So this reach out to Zelensky by our president about reforming Ukraine, I don't think is going to go anywhere, folks. They're all just involved over there in the Ukraine too much. And let me give you a little background on what happened. In 89, the Berlin Wall came down, and that set into motion a breakup of the formerly Soviet Union. And what happened after that was the wheeler dealers operating out of Washington at the time, I think it was the Bill Clinton administration, started wheeling and dealing with the so-called oligarchs in the former Soviet Union, but became Russia today, Russia as we know it today. So what they started doing is they started going in and plundering the Russian economy and the treasury and buying up existing state-owned corporations and service industries, oil, gas, things like that, and going in and buying them up for pennies on the dollar, see. And so this went on for several years until Putin came in. And then Putin came in and stopped that and tried to re-energize Mother Russia and renationalize it into a nation state and stopped all that thieving and plundering by these oligarchs and kicked them out, put some of them in prison, kicked some of them out, put them in prison. Some of them are still living in England. They own all these big soccer teams and the multi-million dollar deals, and they're willing and dealing all over the world, see. So that's why they got mad at Putin. And then what happened was the president of the Ukraine, in the early 2000 period there, was friendly to Putin. So it's pretty proven now that $5 billion was spent to overthrow that president and run him out of the Ukraine, and he sought refuge in Russia. The Maidan Square protest movement was part of that, and it was just an ugly, people died around that protest, that independence square is what it's called, or Maidan massacre, you know, is another word for it. But we've been going in there. There's a, you know, leaked phone conversation from Victoria Nuland. She was controlling that for the State Department at the time. And all of this was occurring that was occurring, and it was just terrible. American, ugly American, let's take over that, let's run out the existing Ukrainian duly elected president, go in there and put in our little puppet, and then take over all the industry. And some of the things too, at the time that the IMF was starting to go in there and make these loans, they were making requirements. Some of the requirements where they doubled the gas and gasoline, and then they also made farmland available for purchase by foreigners. See, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, Charlotte Littlefield Brown, and I interviewed him way back. Forget his name, but the book is Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and the Ukraine is a perfect example of these major lenders going in, loaning to a country, giving them on the tape because they needed the money, and then going in and sending their vultures in to plunder and steal as much of the assets of the country that they can. And I believe that the Ukraine has been a victim of that. Way back underneath Stalin, Stalin carried out against the Cossacks a bloody liquidation and starvation program. So the Ukrainians in general are very hateful, and I don't blame them against that Stalinistic thing, Stalinism, you know. And so the Ukrainian language is spoken by the majority of people in the Ukraine proper. There's a south to the east, southeast area is dominated by more Russian speaking individuals and farmers and people living there. So this is where you still have a battle line drawn between the so-called the rebel in Donbass area. And so that's ongoing. And this is where, of all people, Barack Obama would not give the Javelin missiles that they were talking about on the phone the other day, but Trump will, see. And so the Javelin missiles is an anti-tank missile that can take out tanks. And the Russians supposedly would come in there with tanks in this Donbass area. So it's still undecided and not settled yet. And so this is what we're going to be seeing in this area. But as far as Trump being guilty of anything, this is possibly of Adam Schiff and those people. They concocted this whole assault and this whole, you know, whistleblower. Now there's another whistleblower that's coming up. That's what they always think. They're going to throw so much mud up on the wall where some of it may stick, see. Now, Trump is a fiery individual. He's a fighter. He fights these people. And I don't blame him. But he's done so much, even in the throes of all of this assault on him and these attacks. They're just ungodly. And these people, those little examples that I gave this first hour about Benghazi and Hillary and Elaine, she's being called a liar, and so is Susan Rice, all these people. They were in that Obama administration. And also the Obama administration, we have evidence there. It's growing every day that the FISAs and the steel documents and all this stuff were put up jobs. And they put them up to help Hillary. And there was weaponization of intelligence organizations, it appears. But we're moving towards that. With the IG investigations coming out shortly, we'll have more and more information. So the goal of these whistleblowers now is to take somewhat, of the attention off the IG report, which is imminently going to be released. And that will devastate many of these people because just merely the FISA applications that were signed, there were four of them. And they were using the Steele document in an overwhelming way to support their findings to get the surveillance techniques that they needed to spy on Trump before, during the election, and after him going into office. So this is the biggest scandal that we've ever had in this country. And we as Americans just must wake up and forget about the parties. This is about the country. God bless America. Thank you for listening.